You're listening to Irish Sports Talk.
Hello, Notre Dame fans. Welcome to Irish Sports Talk. This is episode 443. I'm here, of course, and Randall's here. And we've got Matt Freeman from Irish Sports Daily joining us. Matt, thanks for joining us. And how are you doing today?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Doing good. We were talking a little bit before the podcast, and you made some kind of comment about the weather not being the greatest for you. You grew up in Ohio, but is winter weather not something you enjoy?
No, I mean, it's the weather here is basically the same as in Columbus, but I mean, it's just once it starts to get cold and as we saw this weekend, a little snow on the ground, it just makes it that much more unenjoyable. So this is not my favorite time of the year.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I've spent too many winters working outside, and now I'm not outside as much anymore, but I just can't handle the cold, and I'm counting the days till we go to Belize over Christmas, so.
Yeah, that's got to be nice. I think it's just more of the fact that you have to scrape off your car every single day that it snows. I think that's the part that I dislike the most.
Wait, don't you have a garage at your house?
I do. I do have a garage at my house, but sometimes there's the other person that lives with me takes the garage, so it's always a fight to get inside.
Makes sense.
All right. Well, yeah, Matt's here. We're going to talk a little bit about the Echoes and about recruiting. And Randall, I'll let you go ahead and get us started with the direction of the topics today.
Well, last week we talked about Braden Lindsey. Oh, no, we wouldn't. Well, Braden Lindsey, that had been committed to Notre Dame at one point, ended up committing to Oregon. Now he decommitted from Oregon, and he's getting interest from Notre Dame again. But I was just looking at some tweets that were sent out from Oregon fans, which I'm trying to. I wish I'd remember where the video was, but there was a video sent out by somebody from the Oregon coaching staff when he decommitted from Notre Dame. It had something to do with Rudy, and I can't remember where I saw it or what it was about exactly. Do you remember what it was, Matt?
I remember there being some type of controversy, but I forget the exact nature of the gif that was tweeted out.
Yeah. Well, anyways, just now.
Actually, I think it was the grounds guy clapping.
Oh, it was something from the Rudy movie. I wish I could remember who had tweeted it out or where to find it, but I guess I didn't spend enough time looking for it. But now it's the other way. A state representative from Oregon even tweeted out about this. He must be a big Ducks fan. But Bill Post, state representative, said, "Hey, kid, go Ducks, will be fine. Life lessons. Don't think of yourself as all that. Thanks." So, anyways, I've just been looking at that and thought it was kind of interesting that now you got state representatives getting involved and the roles are reversed this time. So anyway, so talking about Braden Lindsey, Matt, what is your take on him? How what are Notre Dame's chances with him?
I still think Oregon's probably the favorite to land him since they hired Crystal Ball. So I mean, he has some familiarity with that staff. I believe it'll probably just come down to which assistant coaches stay at Oregon. Because, I mean, he's very comfortable with the staff that was in place up there. So it'll just kind of depend on how Cristobal shapes his staff. But I do think he likes Notre Dame quite a bit. Just the fact that less than a week after he decommitted, he was back in South Bend. I think that speaks volumes. And I know that the commits would welcome him back, and they all get along pretty good. So I think if he ended up choosing Notre Dame, it'd be a pretty good fit. But, I mean, there's still a long way to go. I would imagine that there's a couple other schools that he would like to take visits to just to make sure that that's not the place for him, or it is the place for him, I guess. But I think he's just kind of restarting his recruitment and seeing where he stands with a lot of schools.
So he does have a good relationship with the current recruits, because I do remember when he decommitted, I think I saw more tweets from the current commits about a decommitment than I had in the past. So that's kind of what's made me a little bit skeptical of him coming back to Notre Dame, it didn't seem like the relationships had been there earlier. But is that, does that look like it's better now?
Yeah, I think, I mean, anytime that there's a decommitment, I mean, people are going to be unhappy or get emotional about it. But at the end of the day, the commits understand that he has to do what's best for him. So whether that's staying with Notre Dame or staying with Oregon, I mean, they're fine with that. But, I mean, obviously they would love to have him in the class and everything. But I think just when he decommitted, it just came as a little bit of a surprise to everybody. So I think the kids just kind of showed, I don't want to say immaturity, but just not the best judgment at times in some of the stuff they tweeted out.
Yeah, makes sense. And while we're talking about decommitments, Notre Dame had one this weekend. Gordon Porter decommitted. Is there, what kind of insight do you have on that?
Not much. It pretty much surprised everybody. So Kelly did an in-home there, I think, last week. So, I mean, everything seemed to be on the up and up. So, did some digging and stuff. But there's not really much coming out of Porter camp, and Notre Dame just was pretty surprised that that happened. So, I don't expect that bridge to be reopened. So I think I think Notre Dame's moving on from him as Gordon's moving on from that, from Notre Dame. So,
yeah, and they have been recruiting other wide receivers, and with all the current wide receivers on the roster, do you think that kind of has an effect on that, or kind of affects the wide receiver recruiting at this point?
No, I mean, Notre Dame's been pretty upfront with all the kids. I mean, they're looking to take three or four receivers this class, five if they can get Amon-Ra, which probably isn't going to happen. But, yeah, I mean, he was aware of the numbers game, so my guess is Chip Kelly might have had some impact on that, but, I mean, that's just my guess without any information from either side. But I know Chip Kelly's looking for speed, and Jordan Porter has a lot of it. So, I mean, it seems like a pretty safe bet that he would be one of the targets UCLA would have identified at this point.
Yeah, that Chip Kelly hire definitely kind of changed some things for recruits, I think. Kind of made them reconsider UCLA. This past weekend was a big recruiting weekend for Notre Dame with the Echoes. You just want to tell us a little bit how that went, kind of what you've been hearing coming away from the weekend.
It was a pretty positive recruiting week. I think they would have loved to have a couple commits coming out of it, but at the same time, we're less than, 48 hours from it. So, I think they hit the right notes with all the kids. I mean, getting Kyler Gordon, the 2018 cornerback, who's at the top of their board back on campus for an unofficial visit is, I mean, there's no words that can put it how big that was, that the kid would pay his way out just to come out and see Notre Dame for a second time. And I heard that the commits really connected well with him and vice versa. So it's just a matter of him being able to tell the home state team, Washington, no. We already talked about Braden Lindsey, but Luke Jones, a 2018 Arkansas offensive line commit, came up, loved it, meshed with the offensive line guys pretty well. So I think he just needs to go home and think about it, as well as probably just take some time to get to know the new Arkansas staff and see where he fits in their plans. And then there was a defensive end from Alabama, Malik Langham. He was up. He didn't make it in for the Echoes because he had a basketball game on Friday, but he came up on Saturday. He loved it. It's just very, very different from the culture and environment he's used to in Alabama. So either he's going to love it or he doesn't feel like he can succeed there. So I think he really enjoyed it, though. So we'll see. He just got the Alabama offer, so it's always tough for an Alabama kid to turn down Nick Saban, so we'll see if the Irish can make a move here in the next couple weeks on their in-homes.
Yeah, it's hard to turn down that cash that they... Notre Dame did get one commitment last night, Tariq Bracey. What do you see from him?
He's definitely a speed guy. I think his game is somewhat similar to Julian Love's with just a little bit more speed to it. He's kind of the same size and plays that aggressive style of in your face, but it's somewhat controlled like Love, but it's just a faster version. So I think Julian's probably a little bit more physical, but they're in the same type of mold, so I think it's going to be a pretty good fit.
That's good to hear if he's being compared with Julian Love. And he did also play running back at his school, and I believe Friday night, or was it Saturday night, in his high school game, he had 311 yards on 36 carries, so I guess...
Yeah, not bad.
Notre Dame's pretty loaded running back, but if they ever need somebody to fill in, he might be somebody to look at. So looking at the early signing period, what are we, 9 days away? And then even normal signing period in February, kind of how big do you expect this class to be and who will they add by then?
I fully expect Notre Dame to sign as many as they can. I think everyone's seen Notre Dame's inability to hit 85 scholarships year in, year out. So, I mean, you take as many as you can, and, I mean, it'll work itself out between transfers, guys declaring early for the NFL, or just the one or two kids that get in trouble and get kicked out each year. So, I mean, my guess is the ideal number is 25, 26. But, I mean, I don't know if they're going to be able to hit that mark, but, I mean, I can't see them turning anybody away at this point unless they get too many at, like, a receiver or a cornerback position. But even then, I think there'd be some discussion in terms of just overloading just because they didn't sign very many corners last year.
And
which was zero corners.
Yeah, that's pretty – it seemed like they're kind of feast or famine on that because they signed quite a few – the year before, but they were just scrambling to get numbers then. Tommy Tremble's one guy that's playing. It looks like he's planning to announce on Thursday. You going to give us a crystal ball on that?
I can't give a crystal ball because I'm not with 24/7. I'm not all into that jazz. But I think Notre Dame's in pretty good shape. I think from what Tremble told me earlier today, Notre Dame will be in, Brian Kelly will be in to see him on Wednesday, so the day before he decides. So I think Notre Dame feels pretty confident already that they're in good shape with him, and if Kelly can go in and calm the waters, I think Notre Dame should end up with another tight end commitment on Thursday.
Very good. And you mentioned, you know, they'd like to get to 24 or 25. Are there any guys that you feel pretty confident they'll end up at Notre Dame?
The most confident right now, I mean, it'd probably have to be Houston Griffith, the 2018 corner from IMG, who's originally from Chicago. Todd Light's seeing him probably right about now for a visit. So I think the goal is just to make sure the plan is all set just in terms of what he wants to do. I know Florida State's trying to make one last push as well as Wisconsin, but I don't see either one of those schools making up much ground on Notre Dame at this point. So I think it could be a sooner versus later type of deal, but I mean, you never know with Willie Taggart and Florida State, but I feel pretty confident Notre Dame's going to land him.
Very good. And with you covering recruiting and writing so many articles about recruiting, do you like the early signing period? Does that take some pressure off of you, or is it just more work from a reporter's standpoint?
I mean, it's not any more work. I mean, personally, I see multiple positives and multiple negatives for it. I mean, the whole thing was kind of created to ensure kids get spots on there on teams and teams honor their scholarships. But at the same time, schools can still be very shady with the whole process. I mean, like take Notre Dame, for instance, if the majority of their kids are planning on signing early. So if you have 20 commitments and all 20 kids sign in December, then you can essentially fire your entire assistant coaching staff and those 20 kids have to come to Notre Dame. So I think it'll be interesting to see how many coaching changes happen after the early signing period, because typically a ton of coaching changes happen after National Signing Day. So it'll be interesting just to see if teams decide to go ahead and make those changes if they have the majority of their class in, or if they go ahead and wait until after the February signing day, which is kind of crappy for the kids too, just because they get recruited by these guys and then all of a sudden that day after they sign, the entire staff changes or multiple staff changes. So I think that'll just be something to watch.
Yeah, it will be interesting. And I did, you know, some of those things do resonate with the recruits. I mean, just the fact that they can get rid of staffs and, you know, go to the next job year later, just like somebody tweeted out about Jimbo Fisher, you know, does he have to sit out a year when he goes to A&M before he can start coaching? Because, you know, he basically sounds like he kind of walked out on Florida State. And
yeah, I mean, or like Willie Taggart at Oregon. I mean,
he was only there for a year, right?
Where he takes the Florida State job, so I mean, it's just,
yeah.
I don't know. I feel sorry for the kids and all this, just because you got adults taking advantage of them and stuff like that. And I mean, don't get me wrong, the kids can play the game too, but at the same time, they're a little bit more limited than the coaches.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, thanks a lot, Matt, for joining us and giving us some info here on the recruiting. Listeners, you can follow Matt on Twitter at MattFreemanISD and check out IrishSportsDaily.com for the latest recruiting news and articles about the Notre Dame football team and basketball, too, if you guys are Notre Dame basketball fans. Matt, you said you hate the cold. Are you going to be traveling down to Florida for the bowl game?
Oh, yes. I will be down there for the bowl game from December 30th through January 3rd, so I'm very much looking forward to the warm weathers of Orlando.
All right. Very good. We wish you the best. So thanks again, Matt. And any final plug that you want to plug in before we wrap this up?
Just sign up for Irish Sports Daily. No better time with the early signing period 9 days away. So go check us out.
Okay. Very good. There you have it, guys. Check it out, IrishSportsDaily.com. All right, we're back. Thank you, Matt, for joining us. And we're going to talk the awards that were given out at Echoes, and also going over the Over and Under podcast, where we gave our predictions at the beginning of the year, and now we can just look back and see how we stack up. So let's just start with the award winners from Echoes. Most Valuable Player, Quentin Nelson. Offensive Player of the Year, Josh Adams. Defensive, and we'll comment if, yeah, whenever, as we go through here.
The MVP, that's the only like the third time an offensive lineman has been named MVP at Notre Dame. I think the last time was like in the 70s, maybe.
Serious, wow.
Yeah.
But that can change so much, too, depending
well
on the coaching staff, what they perceive.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a Notre Dame.
Yeah. Defensive Player of the Year, Niles Morgan. This is the first, just like looking through this, looking down here, this is the first one that kind of surprised me a little bit. And we see that there were some other players who would you have given Defensive Player of the Year? Because I think I would have given
Coney would have.
I would have given it to Tavon Coney, and I don't know.
Or Julian Love.
He didn't play as much at the beginning of the year.
Well, I think what's kind of interesting with some of these is this: it's a Notre Dame
award.
And so it's a lot more than what we just see in the games. I think there's a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff involved with this. And so I think that says something about Niles Morgan. Maybe he's more of a leader behind the scenes than what we thought he was.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. But just looking over the numbers here, or even maybe a Drew Tranquil. But these are the leading tacklers for the entire season is Tavon Coney. He didn't play nearly as much the first half of the season. He did play.
Yeah. You know what we should have done? We should have come up with our own. We'll have to do that next year. Who we think is will be nominated for each award and then see how close we are.
This number will play away. That was okay. Total tackles, Tavon Coney had 99. Second was Niles Morgan with 83. Tackles for loss, also Tavon Coney. He had 33. Oh, sorry, that was yards.
I was going to say, that's pretty impressive.
he had 12 and a half tackles for loss. The second, there was two players that were tied for second, Drew Tranquil and Jerry Tillery. How many do you think they had? So 12 and a half, what did second place have?
Eight.
Eight and a half.
Wow.
That's a big difference.
Yeah.
Tavon Coney, yeah, he had an excellent year. Anyway, moving on here. Scout Team Player of the Year for offense was offensive line Dylan Gibbons, and Scout Team Player of the Year defense was Alohi Gilman. And that, I took that as a pretty big positive, seeing that he's making both an of impact. Those. Well, I guess true. Because, yeah, Gibbons is going to need to be relied on as a starter at some point.
Yeah.
And then Alohi Gilman, a lot of people have high expectations. I don't have.
I don't think old people have a lot of high expectation. I thought so at first, but
well,
the word I've been hearing is that he's not what I think he's going to. I think he's going to be better than what people think. I feel like I'm more positive about him than the majority
of fans are expecting him to step in be a starter from day one. I don't think he's just going to step in and be a starter.
No, and that's what we hear from media as well.
But do you think that that's more likely?
I think he has a chance to start. He'll definitely be in the rotation next year.
Okay. Newcomer of the Year offense, quarterback Brandon Wimbush.
The funny thing about that award is when they played like his highlight reel and he got up to accept the award, he wondered where the passing touchdowns were in his highlight video. So he's obviously listening to all the noise.
Hey, and yeah,
definitely, and there were
definitely needs to improve in the passing game, but he set records.
There were. Yeah, Notre Dame, but it's funny.
Notre Dame's rushing offense set records when he was a quarterback, and he was a big part of that. Newcomer of the Year on defense was John Bonner. And do you know what is the definition of newcomer?
I feel like the most improved, maybe. Or like it's the surprise, somebody that went from
not being
in consideration.
Barely being in the rotation.
Yeah.
I would have put Tavon Coney there.
No, because Coney played.
Did he play that much last year?
Not last year, but he did as a freshman. He played quite a bit as a freshman.
Quite a bit. Maybe.
Well, I mean, he was out there making plays. No, he was in there at linebacker.
Not a lot. He was in there on some packages.
He was making plays, and I was annoyed that he didn't play more his second year. That was an issue with Brian Van Gorder.
Yeah.
So he was not. Well, to me at least, he was not a newcomer. Coney was not. Yeah, he improved. Maybe you could have him as like most improved or something.
Surprise!
But he's not a newcomer. Like you knew, you kind of knew what you had with him. Jonathan Bonner went from not doing anything to being a starter.
I guess. And then special teams player of the year, linebacker Greer Martini. Is there anything? Anyone else you would have picked for special teams player of the year? Maybe a kicker?
I was a little surprised with the Martini getting special teams player of the year. I mean, he played special teams, but I would have expected, yeah, Chris Fink or something. No, I'm kidding. Maybe one of the kickers. Yeah. Yeah, it's made a bigger impact than what we realized.
Offensive lineman of the year, Mike McGlinchey. And you knew that.
I think he got that because Nelson was MVP. Yeah,
you knew that those two guys were going to get awarded.
Because when I saw that, they came out with offensive lineman of the year. And when they didn't pick McGlinchey, then I figured Nelson has to be up for another award.
If they have offensive lineman of the year, why don't they have defensive lineman of the year?
I don't know.
Well, let's just make up our own. Defensive lineman of the year, so if you can't...
Jerry Tillery.
Well, yeah. I think so, too. And Dalen Hayes, I mean, he recovered some fumbles. I mean, Dalen Hayes had an impressive... He played as a freshman, but really stepped up in a big way.
Didn't Jerry Tillery get an award?
Oh, you know, I was just reading this wrong. Yes, there is a defensive lineman of the year.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure he got the...
That was Jerry Tillery. And then Irish Around the Bend. Do you know what that was for?
I don't know what all is involved with that.
Anyway. Impact Player of the Year. Is that different from Most Valuable Player of the Year? But Impact Player of the Year did go to Tavon Coney. So he did get an award. And this was maybe just an award because they needed to make sure that he did get some recognition, because he's your leading tackler, leads your team with tackles for loss by a pretty significant margin. He needed to get some.
I think the difference that I would say that the impact player, he made a big impact out in the field. Morgan probably got the defensive award because of everything, including the off-field stuff. And it's more that leader and, you know, in charge of the defense. I think that includes everything versus impact of the player would be Coney obviously made an impact when he was out on the field.
And then Drew Tranquil also did get an award. He got the Rockne Student Athlete Award.
And he had some big news when he accepted that award.
He did. We may as well. I mean, I'm sure everyone knows about it by now. But, yes, he's coming back for his fifth year. I did not think he would come back. You thought he would.
Yeah. Well, I could see where you come from as far as he is getting married, and he mentioned how he's going to be married, and his future wife was okay with coming back for another year. But he's not a second round pick.
But he won't be next year either.
But he can improve. I mean,
I don't think he can. I don't think he can improve his draft stock.
I think he can.
But here's where you can only...
Well, and he can come back. I mean, you have another... They're not going to the playoffs this year. He can come back and do that.
Well, that's what I was going to say. He can go... I don't think he loses anything by coming back, but he does gain the opportunity to play for a national championship at Notre Dame.
And he is going to be the leader on the defense.
Yeah. And I think him coming back is bigger than even him being in the linebacker group, is what he will bring in the winter, starting off the attitude that is needed to pay attention to detail, to work hard, and to just be intentional, I think is more important than maybe what he brings as a player. And he played phenomenal. I mean, he was tied for second with tackles for loss. He had 8.5. So it's not like he didn't do anything. I mean, he was third on team with total tackles with 74. So, yes, he's an important player. He makes a huge, huge impact.
I'll throw this in there now. This is what I think is kind of intriguing is, okay, so he's a leader, and he's going to, I think some of his job, what he needs to do is get this team pumped and excited to be playing, their motivation, basically. Get them motivated. And Brian Kelly has gotten criticism about what he said in, I think it was his last press conference, about, you know, the players being more motivated, you know, and they got to, he kind of put it on the players on, they got to do some of that themselves. And he got quite a bit of criticism for that and not taking the blame for that. What's interesting to me is Mike Bray, just this last weekend, was asked the same question, you know, who has to motivate this team? Is it going to come from the players, or is this, you know, something you have to do? And he said, well, he's not sure yet. He doesn't know this team good enough, you know, whatever. Obviously, completely different sport, whatever, but I do think at this point everything is just getting blamed on Brian Kelly.
I completely agree.
So,
okay, there's a few more here. Next man in, Andrew Trimbetti. And this was probably...
You could have almost given it to, like...
Nick, or Sean Crawford.
Oh, I guess that's an option. But like the Orr guys, which Trimbetti was as well. But I guess it's hard to tell. Coney started some of the games and Martini started some of the games. So that is a good... I'm fine with that award.
And then the... One second. The walk-on player of the year went to linebacker Robbie Regan.
And
do you have any thoughts on that, Randall? Do you think they should have picked a different walk-on for the walk-on player of the year?
No.
I'm joking.
He's a triple option guy, so he did a good job. They beat Navy, so he obviously did his job. Here's something. Baker Mayfield won the Heisman. He's the first player to win the Heisman that started out as a college walk-on. So he actually walked on.
But he was a highly recruited player, though, right?
Not necessarily. He walked on. I mean, he was a walk-on. Probably preferred walk-on, whatever, but he did not go to school as a scholarship player.
I thought he just really wanted to play for Oklahoma.
Well, that could be it, but he obviously didn't have a scholarship from Oklahoma. Okay. He was at another school as well. I don't know much of his history, but he was at another school as well.
I don't know any of his history. All I know is that most people hate him, is about all I know about him.
I just think it's funny. Kind of off track. I just think it's funny that Lamar Jackson won last year, put up better numbers this year, and can't win 2 years in a row.
Well, their team was awful this year.
Well, I know. That's what I'm saying. It's all about team. If you're 11-1, you're going to get it versus whatever Louisville was.
All right, so we talked a little bit about what it does, Drew Tranquil coming back. You know, he can help this team, and what's he coming back for? I mean, to win it, get to the playoff, win a championship. Notre Dame did finalize the schedule, so let's just briefly.
Another guy that announced when he's coming back is Nick Wisher. He did say he's coming back for his fifth year, and I think that is a good thing. Just for the experience, he has experience and has done more over his career than Alize Mack has at this point.
Yeah, but Alize Mack has only played.
But they need freshman, the experience. Here's the thing. He might get passed up by the younger guys, but they need the experienced guy out there, somebody they can fall back
on. I'm glad he's back.
Yeah. And
but I don't think he's going to be the leading tight end.
He's going to be a starter.
He's not going to finish the year being the man out there with the most snaps.
Did you watch the tight ends this year?
Yeah, they were about as bad as the wide receivers were about catching the football.
I think he'll do good being the number one guy next year. Anyways, Smythe is going to be playing in the Senior Bowl. He announced that as well. He's not coming back. Doesn't have any more eligibility. But as far as some of the other guys, Coney said that he did request feedback from the NFL, and he hasn't made a decision what he's going to do.
And Jerry Tillery as well.
I would have thought Coney was just saying he's coming back, but
I'm not convinced.
That could be a surprise.
I would not be surprised. With the way he played, he'll probably get a second-round grade.
No.
I don't know, Randall.
He will not get a second-round grade.
Don't you think he'd be drafted before Niles Morgan? I think he would.
I don't know.
I don't think.
Niles Morgan isn't a second-rounder either.
Well.
Because the NFL draft is now first-round, second-round. Go back to school.
Yeah.
He's going to get a go back to school grade.
You're right. He probably
will. He doesn't have to go back to school, but that's what grade he's going to get.
He probably will, but I think he is a second round caliber player, Tavon Coney.
Not yet.
Call me a homer.
Not yet. Okay, a homer.
Schedule next year. This season ended up being much more difficult than I ever anticipated. Next year, you've got teams like Ball State, Vanderbilt, Wake Forest again. But then you got Michigan to start off the season. And I'm glad Michigan is game one, because this is a game that Notre Dame could very easily lose this game. I know Michigan wasn't quite as hot as what people expected. And I don't know why some fans think Harbaugh is a bad coach. But this Michigan team is going to be ready to play. And
they always play better at the beginning of the year.
That's true. But I'm glad that Michigan's at the beginning of the year, because Notre Dame can lose this game and still get into the playoff. I'm pretty sure of that. Florida State, you know, a couple years ago, this looked like, oh, man, this is going to be a play-in game for the playoff if Notre Dame is up to that level. And now, who knows? who knows what kind of state Florida State is going to be in. And then, of course, you've got Stanford at the end of September, and then you've got USC at the end of the year.
And the Shamrock Series is coming back next year.
Yes.
So it is against Syracuse at Yankee Stadium.
Yep, that is November 17th, and it'll be, strangely, it'll be a 2:30, a little bit different, 2:30 kickoff.
There's actually quite a few 2:30 games next year. I think there's more 2:30 games than are 3:30.
I didn't know that.
Three of them are at 7:30, Michigan, Stanford, and Florida State. And it says two home games, Vanderbilt and Pittsburgh at 2:30. Ball State is at 3:30. So all right. That's kind of weird.
But just glancing at it, this schedule does... Because Florida State, you know, it doesn't look nearly as good, I don't think this schedule, just glancing at it, is as good as this year's schedule is. I mean...
The thing is, it changes every year.
I do think I think Michigan's going to be very solid. I do think the wild card is Florida State. And I'm very sure I know what Stanford's going to be and what USC is going to be, but Florida State is the wild card because they look awful, but they could, potentially, they could be.
Right now, what's Notre Dame's record going to be?
I think they're going to be a 9-win team.
They're going to be 10-2.
I don't think so. They lose too much on the offense. I don't think they're going to be as good next year. I think they're going to be a 9-3.
It's the Brandon Wimbush comeback here.
Okay.
And talking about the quarterback, Phil Dracovic had an incredible game, won state title, and he was named the Pennsylvania Gatorade Player of the Year, and then the 2019 quarterback commit, Cade McNamara, was named Gatorade Player of the Year for Nevada, so... Here you got the next two quarterbacks, Gatorade Players of the Year for their respective states, and I will say the backup quarterback is still the best quarterback on the team.
I was surprised how quickly our friend Tony was calling for
Dracovic.
Dracovic needs to be the starter.
He's not the only one, but people forget what Brandon Wimbush did in high school as well. I mean, we were talking about that. They put up impressive numbers in high school, all these guys do, and Wimbush thing is mental.
Yeah.
And we saw the same thing with Dane Crist, so you never know. It's a different world going from high school to college.
Okay, let's talk about our over and under predictions from way
I don't know if we want to.
Way back, August 31st, I tweeted out handful of different poll questions. We'll just go over these. Notre Dame's scoring points per game offensively at 33. Both of us picked the over, including 69% of the voters on Twitter. And Notre Dame did go over 33 points per game, 35.3 points per game. Defense, 24 points per game. Both of us took the under, and it ended up being 21.8. And if the over under would have been 21.8, I would have taken the over because I thought it would be right at 24 points per game. So we were both right, but I wasn't super confident in this. 67% of the voters also took the under on that one as well. Drops by Alize Mack at 20%. We both took the under, including 81% of the polls, including 81% of you. And that is incorrect. Alize Mack dropped 25% of his catches. Thank you to Irish Don on the forums for keeping track of this throughout the season. And this was a disappointment. I included this little tidbit with the tweet. Three NFL tight ends recorded 20% or higher drops in 2016. That... means that doesn't happen very often, and Alize Mack was, yeah.
And that's probably the backup. I don't know, but didn't you all say he was going to score 10 touchdowns?
We're getting to that.
Oh, okay, I didn't remember if it was one of the over and unders.
I think it was. Okay, tackles for loss for the entire team. That was at 85. Randall, you took the over. I took the under. 63% of you took the over as well. And Notre Dame as a team had 75. So did not reach that 85 mark, but still an improvement over the previous year, which was 61. So from 61 to 75. And then total sacks for Notre Dame. That was at 28.5 sacks. Randall and I both took the under. 55% of you took the over. And Notre Dame was at 22 sacks for this season. And lest you think that's really disappointing, in 2016, that total was 14.
I remember it was a couple games into the season before they recorded their first sack. Yeah.
Touchdown catches by Alize Mack at 6.5. Randall took the under. I took the over. 53% of you took the under as well. Alize Mack did not catch 7 touchdown catches.
Oh, okay.
He had 1 touchdown catch, and it was in, I mean, it was a trash touchdown against Miami. And Notre Dame's leading receiver in yards. This is for wide receivers only. Randall had Cam Smith. I had Chase Claypool. And remember, at the beginning of the year, where is that paper, Randall? Is it here?
Which one?
I had made a prediction that Stuyvesant, in at least one metric, would be the second most productive wide receiver.
Oh, yeah.
So I wasn't sure if it was going to be the number of catches, number of yards, or touchdowns. But I didn't go with that original prediction because it was a little unclear if he would be playing.
Yeah.
So I went with Chase Claypool. 51% of you took Chase Claypool. 22 took Cam Smith. 18 took other. And 9 took Freddie Kantin. So Freddie Kantin and Cam Smith.
Major disappointments.
Ended up not doing anything. The second leading receiver was Chase Claypool. He had 402 yards. And then Kevin Stefferson was third with 359 yards. EQ was the leading receiver, 468. Kevin Stefferson, he led the team in touchdown catches. He had 5.
Wow.
EQ had 4.
He definitely made up some ground.
He did, and he had the most yards per game, 44.9, and EQ had 39. Notre Dame's second leading rusher in yards. This is for running backs only. Both of us took Dexter Williams, and 47% of you also took Dexter Williams. 30% took Tony Jones, and 23% took Josh Adams, who I did make clear is a starter, and maybe it wasn't clear enough. But the second leading rusher out of the running back group was Deion McIntosh.
That is crazy. Deion, I know I was borderline on Tony Jones.
Deion McIntosh, well, no, Dexter Williams was would have been the third.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, in picking him second.
Oh. Josh Adams had 1,386 yards. Deion McIntosh had 368. Dexter Williams had...
That's a big drop, though.
324, and Tony Jones had 232.
What's so shocking about that is we were trying to figure out how they're going to get all these running backs playing time.
They just didn't. No, I mean, they did play a lot of two running back sets.
Yeah,
so
but
they did.
It's surprising how much they did stick with Josh Adams, which he had a monster year.
Yeah.
But
they had him out there for a lot of... Maybe I shouldn't say a lot. For a decent number of snaps, they just didn't get the number of carries that Josh Adams did.
Yeah.
Who will have more touchdown catches of the tight ends, Smythe and Wisher or Kmet and Wright? Randall, you took Smythe and Wisher. I took Kmet and Wright. And 65% of you also took Smythe and Wisher.
And how many of them had touchdowns, period?
Let me figure it out here.
That was one of your other predictions written down. One of the freshman tight ends will be second leader in touchdowns.
Out of the tight end group.
Yeah.
Durham Smythe had 1. Alize Mack was not included in this. And then Nick Wisher had 2. And yeah. Then the freshman didn't have any touchdown catches.
All disappointing right. tight end group this year.
And again, I think a big part of it comes down to drop balls. I mean, if Alize Mack, and the other tight ends did have some drops too, but if there would have been more consistency catching the football, there would have been more first downs. There would have been more additional plays for the offense to run. I feel like that it wouldn't have been a night and day difference, but we would have been more pleased with the tight end unit if not for those drops.
And Alize Mack needs to just focus on catching the ball. Like just this weekend, he tweeted out pictures again of which trophy is like the college football best tight end in college football. Tweeted out a picture of that and just different, like his mindset is, you know, he's this, it's all about being the number one tight end when he's struggling to even be the second string tight end on a team.
The John Mackey Award.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I wish he'd focus more. I wish he'd internalize a little more. I still think he's got
he's reaching for the stars. I mean,
he's got a lot of talent. I still have hope and optimism that.
Well, I agree. What I'm saying is he has the potential of being that if he could just get the simple job of catching the ball. He has a lot of talent, and it's one of the easiest things to do is what he struggles with.
Not necessarily the easiest thing, but the thing he needs to do best or most.
Yeah.
The thing he needs most to be best at.
Yeah.
Okay. That is it for the over and under predictions. Check out the forums, forums.irishsportstalk.net. If you have a question or a thought, something you want to talk about, head on over there. And was there anything else, Randall?
Signing day is 9 days away, so it'll be interesting to see kind of how this all plays out with the early signing period and then the late one. Brian Kelly basically said if you're committed and you don't sign on the first one, then you're obviously not committed to the team.
Yeah, well, what is your take on that? Do you think that's too harsh?
No, I don't think so. I mean, if you're not convinced by then, is a bowl game, is that going to change your mind? A win or a loss in a bowl game, is that going to change it? One game going to change your mind? If you're sitting on, my take is if you're on the fence, then it's going to be one of those players that will end up transferring eventually or something.
If you're verbally committed, there's no reason to not sign in December.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you're not ready to sign, then you shouldn't be committed.
Is there anyone you've heard of that is on the fence about signing in December?
No, not necessarily. I wonder, this is totally my idea, but I wonder with Jordan Porter decommitting, you know, was that something, you know, where he's not quite sure yet and, you know, he knows where Brian Kelly and the staff stand on commitments. You know, did that factor into it as, you know, he's not ready to sign and so... I don't imagine that they're telling him that, hey, either yes or no right now. Mm-hmm. But obviously Brian Kelly made it clear on where he stands on that.
All right. We've got our first set of bowl games coming up pretty soon, really.
I haven't even looked at the schedule yet.
And did you do the Bowl Mania?
No, I didn't. When does the bowl game start?
I thought the 14th was the first game.
Okay.
But I can look here.
But I haven't really looked at those first bowl games. I never really pay attention to some of those first bowl games. But did you watch the Army-Navy games this weekend?
No.
And it was in the snow, so it was good that it was those two teams because about the only thing they could do was run the ball.
No, I didn't watch any of it. I was surprised, though. I feared Navy would be victorious again.
But their uniform, they both had special uniforms. Navies were horrible, but anyway, I mean, if you look at the fine detail there, that's my gripe with Under Armour. They have all these fine details, but when you're watching a game, all you see is kind of a ugly blot. Like you can't see that stuff.
Well, I like to find detail, but it still needs to be.
I do too.
It needs to look nice from far away.
I agree. I like the fine detail, but it also needs to look good from far away, and they struggle a little bit with that.
The first games, Randall, are the 16th.
Okay.
So, a little under a week away.
Very good.
And I guess we're not sure if we're going to do Bowl Mania or not.
I'll tweet it out.
Okay. All right, that's all we've got. Thank you guys for listening. Solon did have an article kind of wrapping up where Notre Dame stands with recruiting. That was put out a few days ago, so check that out over on the website, irishsportstalk.net. And if you have friends or family that enjoy Notre Dame football, share the podcast with them. And if you guys ever have thoughts or questions, tweet them at us or email mail@irishsportstalk.net. Thank you guys for listening, and until next time, go Irish.
Go Irish.